is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears and I'm joined as always by Bradley Chambers. Today we've got three sponsors for the show. Firstly, our good friends at Aerohive, makers of cloud-managed controllerless Wi-Fi. Jam Software, makers of the Casper Suite administration tool for Mac and iOS deployments. And Fuchs Recruiting, a teacher placement agency dedicated to finding qualified licensed teachers overseas. I'll tell you more about all of those sponsors as the show goes on. Bradley, how are you?
Oh, fantastic. Our fifth graders have graduated, and I have all of the iPads back from school in my office. And I've turned them all off for a few weeks. Wiped them down.
All dry in the house.
Yeah, I always joke that our moms are sad because the kids are growing up. Our dads are sad because everywhere past us, in middle school and high school, the tuition is more expensive. So the dads are sad because the tuition's going up. And some of it's pretty significant. There are a few schools that we feed into that it's actually double.
Okay.
Good times.
Yeah, that's a heck of a step. Doubling your fees. Yeah, so I've had an exciting week. I mentioned last show about where some digital exams going on. So what was my week like? The first thing that happened was Monday morning, the day of the digital exam, what was it, last Friday or something, I can't remember the day, but I come in and there's no Wi-Fi in the building. Well, I say no Wi-Fi, there's no internet connection in the building. Every access point is showing a green light, and I don't know why Aerohive have green for bad, but green lights all over the building, and I'm on the phone to our ISP. And it was one of those situations where before you even get to do the menu tree, it's like, there's a national outage. If you're calling about an outage, just call back at another time. Goodbye. And so there's no internet connection for the school. And we're doing this digital exam at 9 a.m. in the morning. And I'm just sort of mildly freaking out at this point. But of course, running Aerohive, as we know, the Wi-Fi was still up and running. So all we really required for our digital exam, because we had the paper sent to us in the mail on a CD-ROM, I didn't need the internet to get the paper, but I did need the Wi-Fi working so that I could print from the exam iPad to the exam printer across our firewalled SSID, and so that we could get the paper done. And of course, running Aerohive saved the day for me. Majorly saved the day for me. So that was a good end to the week last week.
Well, and a note on there, obviously they sponsored us as well. And green, what the lights mean, like white means you know, Aerohive's got a Hive Manager management system, which you can either run on site on a actual appliance, a VMware server, or that they will host your server for you. Basically, they call it a Hive Manager instance. White means that it's connected to Hive Manager. Green means, now depending on your access point, it may not have as many colors, but green means it has DHCP. So it means that it actually has a DHCP address from your DHCP server, but for whatever reason, it cannot get out of the building. And that's okay because of the design. You know, you mentioned in the intro that it's controllerless, but it's cloud managed. So it's managed, not controlled. And so that's one of the huge benefits of it is, all your core functions still work. Your RF optimization still work. Your roaming still works. All that stuff is handled at the edge. So that's one of the awesome things about their access points.
Yeah, so that was fine. It's interesting for us because our network is essentially, it's just a network to the internet. So for us, I think it's different if you had a lot of services on site that you still needed to get to, even if you couldn't get to the internet. But for us, because everything's either in the cloud or on the internet, green means bad for us, because even though green means your Wi-Fi is still working, even though something's gone wrong, for us, that means none of our services are working because all of our services are cloud hosted. So it's partly a function of the way our network's set up as well. So that was last week, but we got the exam done, went without a hitch. That was the one I was nervous about, but it worked fine. And then Monday morning I come in and about four of the nine access points are not connected to Hive Manager. And the rest are working fine. And I'm going, this is not a good situation, right? You know, as we know, right, the best network is a working network. The second best network is a completely broken network. And the worst of all networks is one that's sort of working, but sort of not. So I was in this situation and eventually figured out that our switch, a fairly old 24-port Netgear switch, had just sort of partially died. right? About 7 of the ports of 24 were just completely non-functional, and the rest were fine. So that was an exciting Monday morning. Fortunately, in my sort of wisdom, I actually had a completely perfect duplicate spare lying about from times past. So when we had our Mac network and we had a lot of Ethernet connections to computers, so many more ports were live that we had 2 24-port switches. And then when we did the iPad redeployment, we basically disconnected a lot of those patch panels and I just put that other switch into storage. And from time to time thought about clearing out the cupboard and didn't. And then on Monday morning there, I was able to just download the firmware settings from the broken switch and then upload that firmware to the replacement switch and get the network back up and running in the course of about an hour. So that was my Monday morning this week as well. It's been a fun 7 days since we last spoke.
Yeah, it sounds exciting. No, not in a good way. It's always like fun after the fact to think, okay, we got a new switch in there. That's a good thing. But switch problems are never fun. I think those may be the worst.
Yeah, it's particularly the kind of partial nature. I mean, if the power supply blows, that's fine because the lights are off and you know there's a problem. But when some of the lights are on and some of them are off, you're like, is it a cable? Has somebody broken something? Is it actually disconnected? And you're running around the school trying to see if the thing's actually plugged in, you know, and then you know you've got a problem. So, yep, network heroics are not the kind of thing we like to do, but we have to sometimes.
Yes, it's one of those things that, like you mentioned, intermittent problems are the worst. When they say, oh, this works some of the time, or every once in a while it doesn't work. And I don't know that people that aren't in IT like totally understand how that does no good. You know, it works 90% of the time is impossible to fix.
Yeah, because, you know, regular people are quite pleased that most of the time it's working. Instead, I'm like, I'd rather that it was just completely broken and I didn't know what to do.
Absolutely, because then you at least can hopefully fix it, and it's fixed 100%. So, yes. Yeah. So I'll be probably upgrading firmware on our switches this summer and getting our house in order there. Summer projects, that'll be fun.
Yeah, one of my aims for this summer is to finally pull the last Airport Extreme out of our network. we'll see if we can get that done. I don't know. Maybe.
Before we move on, let's thank our first sponsor of the night. We want to thank the fine folks that we've already mentioned, Aerohive. They unleash the power of enterprise mobility. Aerohive's technology enables organizations of all size to use mobility to increase productivity, engage customers, and grow their business. Deployed in over 13,000 enterprises worldwide, Aerohive's proprietary mobility platform takes advantage of the cloud and a distributed architecture to deliver unified, intelligent, simplified, and cost-effective networks. Got a great community portal if you want to talk to other customers. It's called Hive Nation. It's at community.aerohive.com. And to learn more about them, visit aerohive.com. They've got webinars all the time where you can get a free AP. And again, Fraser and I are both big fans of them. And it's cloud-managed, but it's controllerless as well. So one of the cool things their APs can do, like if you have a switch port that dies and you've got this setting turned on, it can automatically, that's the AP connected to that switch can mesh with another AP and continue serving clients, even if like the switch behind it died.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. Thanks to Aerohive for sponsoring the show this week.
Yeah, good stuff. So you said it was graduation day in your school, Bradley. It's graduation day for the listeners of the podcast as well.
It is. They get their certification as long as they pass the test next Thursday.
There will be a test, and I've got my inkjet printer here. I'm going to print out as many certificates as people need. that was the other thing I did this week, as I got my fire safety certificate again for the school. So I'm now fully safe to fire at people. I think that's what that means. This is episode 15 of the planned 15 that we started off intending to do at the beginning of the year. And we have done them all, assuming this recording goes well, we'll have done them all. But I guess to sort of recap, Bradley, let's go back through what kind of things have we talked about? Where do we start? Vision and plan.
Well, I think you start at from idea conception, and you mm-hmm. kind of analyze where you want to go and realize that technology is a tool for the classroom. And so you start at the beginning, you say, what are we doing and what's our plan?
Yeah, the vision and plan is essential. I've had a number of visits to the school this week, actually, and last week, where I've been emphasizing that more and more, that unless you really know what you're trying to do, it's very hard to answer all the questions that you need to answer. So that's why we put vision and leadership right up front, because unless you know, once you know what you believe and what you intend to do, then actually figuring out how to do it is quite easy. But if you don't know what you want to do, then the questions that you're going to be posed along the way are could, you know, potentially lead you into some very difficult situations if you are sort of a bit wishy-washy and a bit weak on exactly what it is you want to do. So vision and leadership, I continue to emphasize that to everybody I speak to, and I think it's incredibly important, We also talked about the sort of current, looking at the current context that your school's in, because although education worldwide is strangely, I think, similar in many regards, you know, how is it possible that, you know, in a couple of weeks' time I'm flying to America and talking to teachers there, and we still have a common language to talk, even though we call the curriculum something different? Schools across the world are actually much more similar than they are different, I would say. But every school, you know, every school in an area has its own particular challenges, problems, and benefits. So it's really important to realize that everything we've said in this whole series, and everything we say every week on the show, Bradley, I think is dependent on what's right for your school. There's no one answer to all these questions that we've posed.
Yeah, and you know, it's like we have a lot of differences, but if you get down to the core of it, we kind of all have the same issues. We have a lot of the same challenges, and we, you know, of course, how we navigate those might be slightly different based on that context. But our ultimate goal is still the same: to have students learn.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and to prepare them for whatever comes next. And I personally feel that in the broadest sense, that it's not just prepare them for university or college or going straight into the workforce, but it's for what comes next as our society as well. You know, that it's not just everybody goes and sits in a cubicle and does a call center job or whatever, but it's about what happens. You know, are these people ready for the world where cars drive themselves and people, you know, 10% of the population are employed because robots do the rest of the work? You know, that world's not maybe so far away either. So current context, we then sort of got into details. We talked about infrastructure analysis, so looking at things like broadband, Wi-Fi, security in the building, different things like that, and trying to work out where you are and also where you need to get to. Because I was speaking to a school just this week or last week, I think, where we were talking about, well, how much internet connection capacity do you need for day one of your deployment? And the conversation I was having with them was to say that, okay, so you've got this much now, that's fine, but the question is not just how much are you going to get straight away, but also how quickly can you get that? And what, you know, what else do you need to do in order to get up to that level of capacity? And for them, the answer was quite good. It was just we phone up the ISP and we say, turn it up a bit, instead of having to lay new cables or new conduit or fiber or something like that. So important to know not only what you can get, but also how quickly you can get it as well. Next thing?
Yes, teacher training and development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, huge factor, right? And I think probably the hardest one to get right. The technical side of it, you know, not to put too fine a point on Bradley, but I think the technical side can be just solved with money. But you can't buy a school culture. Do you think that's fair to say?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't even, and you know, you're talking about throwing money around. I don't even think if you paid every one of your teachers six figures that you can't buy the culture. That's just something that, again, starts at the top in the vision and the leadership, but that's just having the right people.
It is. I mean, everything we know about school improvement starts and ends with, well, doesn't end, but certainly starts with the leadership in the school. That's why so much emphasis is put on it in terms of things like inspection and school evaluation and so on. And I've said this before, but I think it's really true that unless I'm talking to senior management people in schools and head teachers, I'm very, very pessimistic about the opportunity for success for a deployment if those people are not engaged fully in the whole process, because it's such a big change. And the whole emphasis of this series has been whole school change, not just getting some into a class and trying it out.
One of the
teacher training development is huge.
One of the things that I've been kind of looking at, thinking about it, is like organizational charts in schools, which they seem to be very unlike most businesses where there's like department heads under middle managers. You know, a lot of times in schools, it's very flat. You've got your, you know, head of school or your assistant head of school. And then you've got, you know, a ton of people report directly to them. You know, teachers report directly to either the assistant head of school or head of school. Or, and, you know, it's interesting to see with that kind of culture, it's a, you don't, like in our school, for example, the buck stops with our headmaster. His decision is final. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like you've got to go to your manager that goes to their manager that goes to their manager to try to get things approved. And I think that's good for the culture because it's not like you've got, you know, managers jockeying for position for their employees. You know, obviously a lot of schools, they do have, you know, an IT person with five people under them. I know that exists, but it's not as prevalent as you would think in like, you know, like it is in corporate America where you've got an operations manager with five people under him or her, and then an HR person with five people under him or her. A lot of it's very flat.
Yeah. And that tends to put a lot of pressure on the head teacher, you know, and I think I've seen situations where, you know, head teachers have put themselves out there to talk about doing one-to-one deployments of whatever technology, and they've really got it in the neck personally, very personally, and it's become an issue of their leadership of the school if the messaging goes badly wrong. And I think that's something that, you know, people who are interested in technology and teachers who are keen have to be very aware of, is that if you're pushing for a big deployment like this, you're really asking a lot of your senior managers to stake their professional reputation on the success or failure of these big projects. Because, I mean, not many things you do in your school are as sweeping a change as going one-to-one. I mean, you bring in a new set of textbooks for one subject, that may or may not work, but it's not going to disrupt the entire life of your school and make a massive bite out your budget, which is what a one-to-one program will do. And if you manage it right, it can be a huge success and transformational to your school. But if you don't manage it correctly, it can be not quite, but I know of situations where it's been almost the end of somebody's career because they just got the politics of it wrong. And that's something to be very careful about. So that was it. That was episode 4. And then when we got through, we talked episodes 5, 6, and 7, we were talking about device selection, financing and rollout, and accessories. So kind of getting down to the more kind of brass tacks of how you would actually, what device you might buy and how you're going to finance it and what else you might buy along with it as well. And I think it's fair to say that you and I, Bradley, have become quite enthusiastic about Chromebook in recent days as well.
Yes.
Or recent months. And I think I want to be very clear that almost everything we've said in this whole series is essentially generic, that it's not, for the most part, specific to iPad, but there are some parts that are. But for the most part, the question, this is really about going one-to-one. It's not really about going iPad as such, because many of the same concerns apply whether you're rolling out Chromebooks or whether you're rolling out iPad. We may end up becoming a Chromebook show at our current rates of enthusiasm. I'm not sure, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I'm loving mine so far.
Yeah. I just find it so interesting. I don't think it's I'm not saying that it's superior to the iPad. I actually think the iPad is a superior platform in terms of its broad capabilities. But what I find fascinating about Chromebook is that it fills such a specific niche at such a very low price point. It's very, very interesting. But we should keep that one for another series of shows, I'm sure. We talked about MDM, and I think if there's one, for people who are thinking about iOS, I think if there's one thing that we can have you take away from this, apart from the infrastructure concerns and the leadership aspect, is from a technical point of view, you must seriously have an MDM in place. I think it's fair to say, Bradley, that it's almost impossible to conceive of any large-scale iOS deployment being competently managed without MDM today.
Oh, absolutely. And because it's one of those things, what you spend, what you say by not buying MDM, you will spend in brute force labor.
That is the truest thing. I mean, I had this conversation just the other day with people who are in from another school, and they said, what do you do about MDM? Do you just use a free thing? And I said, no, we deliberately pay for that. And they said, why'd you pay for it? Why don't you just get the free one? And I said, well, look, I work here 5 days a week. I have classes every day for most of every day. And I'm also responsible for literally everything that plugs into a wall in this school. How do you think I cope with that unless I have these tools that are the best tools that are available in the market? And we deliberately spend on those tools in order to avoid having to hire another person to help me out with not cracking up over the course of a year. So yeah, NDM, really, really, really important. And that tied into the next show, which was all about app deployment. And getting that right, I think, is really important. That's one of those things, along with the actual device selection and the approach to rollout. Getting app deployment wrong is one of those things that can actually send your deployment into the sand, I think, because the cost of getting it wrong is huge. Not just money cost, but time cost as well, but the money cost can be substantial too. And I think it's probably right, Bradley, that a good piece of advice right now is don't try and think you've tricked Apple into getting something on the cheap. You know, I think a lot of the times where I've seen people really struggle with their app deployment is where they try to invent a new deployment model, which meant they didn't have to buy one app per device. And that's always problematic, and I would really recommend not trying to be smart with that. App deployment, we talked pupil safety.
Yes.
We talked disaster recovery and damage procedures. These are all just moving parts that you have to think about and have to account for. The way that you handle all those things will be very specific. I had a meeting with a guy from another school in Scotland recently, and he was asking me, well, what do you do with your kids like when they're on their break for in terms of supervising what they do online? And I said, well, we only have 15-minute break in the morning. He said, oh, we've got a 50-minute break in the morning, so we've obviously got a much bigger period to cover. So the answers for his school were obviously going to be very different from my school, because in 15 minutes, I mean, how much trouble can you really get up to? Particularly if you're in a small building that's not very spread out and there's a lot of teachers per pupil around, which is the situation in our school. Whereas he's looking at a school that's very spread out, they've got a huge period of time in the morning, and the pupil-teacher ratio was much higher than it was for our school. So completely different set of concerns, completely different set of solutions to the problem. But again, something that has to be thought about. Okay. Same story. So last couple of shows were about choosing a reseller. We talked, that's more of a European consideration than a US consideration, because obviously you guys work directly through Apple for almost everything. And then the question of what do you do with your existing computer setup? Do you just melt it down for scrap, or do you repurpose it in some way? And then last week's show, parent communication. And I think the takeaway message there, Bradley, was just that it's hard to over-communicate unless you talk in jargon that people don't understand. And then people think you're just trying to trick them with fancy words that mean nothing.
You should never utter the word VLAN in your parent communication.
VLAN and okay, I'm such an end of term brain at the moment. I can't even think of any educational jargon to make fun of. But enhance. Yeah, and putting literacy after everything, right? That's my current complaint, right? Is that everything's just like literacy, you know? And that's kind of the thing that if you put literacy after it, that means it's okay to do it, you know, like games literacy or.
It's like if you say no offense, you can't be offended.
Yeah, exactly. I've taken away your right to be offended. I got a thing through where it was something about a new course that was being offered, and it was, here are our units, and the units were named with three words. And I can't even remember what the words were, but the only thing that struck me was that every one of those words was followed by the word literacy. So it was like media literacy, network literacy, in social media literacy, and they just put literacy after every single thing, and it was it's like, stop doing that, just say the name of what it actually is, you know. But then that brings us to today, right? And we've kind of done that recap, but today is all about the deployment day. And the question today, or the considerations that we're going to face today, Bradley, are just how do you actually go from a purchase order to a working school? Right, that's kind of the section of life that we're going to deal with tonight.
And then you got, I mean, not only a working school, but device in the hand, you know, up operational. The plane is in the air. We use that analogy a lot at our school, is, you know, beginning of school, the plane's taking off and we're landing it right now. Can you get in the air safely? Before we do that, though, let's thank the fine folks at Jamf Software for sponsoring the show. Jamf provides IT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies, such as Macs, iPads, iPhones, and Apple TVs in educational organizations. Now with Casper Focus, they have placed these great technologies directly into the hands of teachers who work with students every day. Casper Focus allows teachers to quickly gain students' attention, conduct secure exams within an app, select the specific Apple TV assigned to their class, choose and distribute iBooks, and even initiate AirPlay right from within Casper Focus. Learn what else you can do with Casper Focus at jampsoftware.com. We'll also have a special URL in the show notes at outofschool.net that will let the folks at Jamf know that you came from our podcast. So if you're looking at MDM software or want to check more out about Jamf, definitely please use that URL. That lets them know that you're finding out about them from the show, and then so they'll keep supporting us. So that'll be in the show notes at outofschool.net.
As I keep telling you, my favorite feature of Jamf is, or Casper Suite, sorry, I keep getting them wrong. My favorite feature is smart device groups. This is just an amazing feature because what it lets you do is it lets you essentially have permanently saved searches where you can get an email when the composition of the group changes. So I have this, my favorite one is people whose devices are more than 75% full. And as people's devices fill up, I start to get emails about whose device is getting busy. But that's a capability that's really, really powerful. It's definitely not in some of the free MDM solutions. So it's something to look out for. Super, super useful. So tonight, the question is, how do we go from a purchase order to having, as you say, Bradley, the plane in the air? I suppose the first thing is you've got to get them in the door, right? You've got to get them delivered.
And that's trickier than you think, because it's a lot of work. I mean, it sounds simple, and especially depending on the size of your school, that can be a lot of boxes.
Yes, it can. You know, if you're going to do 1,200 in a day, like some large secondary school might do, then you're going to have a lot of sore hands at the end of the day just opening those boxes. And I'm always, you know, kind of envious of you, Bradley, getting the kind of frustration-free packaging from Apple for some of the stuff that you have. You get the power cables and stuff in a bag, is that right?
Well, they're in a separate box, all five of them. And it's not frustration-free, but it's less to throw
slightly
away.
Slightly less, yeah.
Yeah, I don't have to undo shrink wrap on all of them.
We get the full retail package. And I think it's very important to plan to have people there to help you. Right, if you're a one man shop like I am and you are, but even if you have a couple of people, you know, you could probably take two or three times as many people as you would normally have to set up that number of computers just to help you cut open the boxes. And I asked some kids in one of the classes that I was teaching that year if they wanted to come in like 2 weeks before the start of term and help us set that all up. And their parents were delighted for them to have something to do kind of towards the end of the holidays. And they were really good at it and super helpful. But one of the things I would probably say about that is if you are going to bring students in, it's important to make sure that you sort of handpick the people who are going to be helpful and not hindering to you. Because you, at that kind of day in your life, 2 weeks before the start of school, you have got enough to do without doing crowd control and discipline on students as well. So it's probably something maybe more for your older pupils rather than for, you know, younger pupils. And certainly in primary school, I think probably pupils are not the right people to be handling that amount of equipment at that stage. But you've got to have them be methodical and they've got to work to your plan as well. And then the next question, of course, is how do you get rid of all that packaging? You know, what do you do with it? So I think if I remember rightly, we actually loaded it all into the back of my car and took it to the recycling center because there was just so much cardboard because every five iPads were individually sleeved and then they were inside, each five were in a carton. And then there was all the wrapping that goes inside the iPad as well. So we had to kind of separate all that out and get rid of it. And that takes time, right? You know, the point is not that, you know, it's hard to cut apart a box because it's not, but the point is that might take you 2 or 3 hours, just, you know, depending on the size of your deployment, just to cut those boxes apart, put them in your vehicle, take them to wherever they have to go, and you've got a budget for that time. So it's a silly point, perhaps, but if you're doing a really big deployment, your resellers may actually send people to help you and also maybe do something for you in terms of taking away the packaging as well.
Well, and like we are very methodical as school gets back in session about getting the building clean and organized. And we're usually doing school tours towards the end, trying to get our enrollment numbers up. You're always wanting to get a couple more students in the door. And so that's one thing to consider. It's not just about getting rid of it, but you know, do you want to look like you've been attacked by cardboard, you know, when people are coming in on school tours?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of something that's sort of simple stuff. Next step, I think, and this has actually happened to us this last summer, was make sure you've been sent the right thing. Seems like a silly thing to say as well, but we had a situation where we got the full delivery, and I cut open the first box, and I realized that the reseller had sent us black iPads instead of white ones, right? Which seems like a silly thing, except if you don't report that and you just go, well, who cares, then the reseller is going to have a problem because they're going to have the wrong kind of inventory in their storehouse and stuff as well. And okay, that's maybe not your problem, but if you've got an ongoing relationship with those people, they're going to come back in a month and go, why didn't you tell us that they were, black instead of white or whatever? So we, helpfully, the reseller just swapped them out straight away for us. But it was very helpful that we had not just piled in and all the kids had opened tons of boxes and cut open all the shrink wrap, because we noticed that before we opened any shrink wrapping, it was an easy matter of just returning. We didn't have to do an RMA or anything like that. So just very carefully check before you start cutting into stuff that you've got the thing you expected to get. And also check the size, right? Because black and white's nice and obvious for me to notice, because the graphics on the box are black or white depending on what's in the box. But 16 versus 32 gigs, that's a mistake you might not notice for quite a long time unless you check. Until your MDM starts sending you emails much earlier in the year than you would otherwise expect. So do check that kind of thing. My next tip is just make sure you don't get mixed up with what you're doing. If you do have a mixed deployment in terms of different sizes of device or classes of device, your iPad minis versus your full size or whatever, just try and keep it organized, right? And I prefer to take whatever unit you get, as for us it's five, Bradley, but to take one of those boxes and completely unpack that box before moving on to the other ones. So I don't unpack all the boxes and then unshrink wrap all the boxes and then open all the boxes, but I'll do five at a time. And this is the most important thing when you do this, and I'm sure you do this as well, Bradley, is as soon as you open that box and take that iPad out, you get it straight in its case, right? Don't leave them lying around bare, waiting for a case. So we had the cases all opened first. We take five cases in a carton, and somebody would just go away to a separate table and unpack five, get the rubbish in the wastebasket, and get those five iPads in a case straight away so that there's no accidents. Because when you're moving around in that kind of situation, the chances of you knocking something off a table are pretty high. But you want to make sure those things are cased as soon as they come out of the box.
And you kind of get an assembly line. It's like, all right, I'm opening, handing it to you. You're pulling the shrink wrap off. You hand it on, case in. It's not set down until the case is in it, or it's in the case. You know.
Yeah. No, that's just kind of inviolable rule of this kind of process of working. I think it's really, really, really important. Now, here's a bit of a debating point. Do you barcode your devices or asset tag them?
No, and the main reason is because that drastically affects your resale value back to Apple if you end up going that route. They will not buy back devices that are asset tagged.
That's interesting. We didn't do that either. We decided we don't really have a very comprehensive asset tagging system in the school because we don't have that much equipment. But we're not GE or British Airways or anything like that. But what I did do this year was I gathered up all the serial numbers for the devices and I printed a barcode label for each of them and put them on the case. And then I got myself a barcode scanner and I was all ready to have this whole workflow where I was going to be able to scan somebody's barcode label and then look them up in the MDM and stuff like that. Turns out that was a complete waste of time. And I spent a lot of time doing it, a lot of time cutting and sticking these labels on. And I think I've maybe scanned like 2 barcodes in the entire year. I mean, it's not been necessary really to look up people's serial numbers. Because we're now using MDM, what I have the kids do is I have them name their iPad with their name in the device name section in the about settings. And then, you know, I just search for their name in the MDM and the serial number pops up, so I know which one is enrolled to them. It's not like I have to, I use that as a primary key for all my information. So, you know, if I had my time to do again, I probably wouldn't bother doing that. I think it's probably not worth it.
Well, I think that again goes to understanding your current context and the size of your deployment. Now, you may, if you're a public school, you may be required to do that by, you know, by your funding.
Or your insurance company for that matter.
Right. And so it just depends. And I think it's just one of those things. Don't assume that you have to do it. Say, well, you know, everybody does this. No, I mean, do what makes sense for your school. You know your school better than we know your school. So do what makes sense.
Yeah, most definitely. So that's, if you follow that process at this point, you've probably got, you've got devices in cases, not turned on yet for the first time and certainly not configured and set up. But the next important step is going to be to do what you might call a pre-flight check. So the way I did this was I did my activation. I just put the whole set through Apple Configurator. And then after that, what I would do is I'd basically restore an empty backup, which meant that the setup assistant was completed and the kids could actually work with the device itself. So I put all the devices through that so that we could have a look at whether or not they were working. And after that, there's basically 4 things you want to check on an iPad before you put it out there. One is obviously any physical damage. Is the device bent or scratched or dented in any way, which it shouldn't be, but it, you know, potentially could happen. Next thing is dead pixels on the screen. Do you have any dead pixels? Are there any problems with the backlight as well? Is the backlight uneven or is it smudged or blotchy in some way? You want to check all that stuff out. And then the next thing you want to check is the switch gear. So make sure the home button works correctly and it isn't loose or anything like that. That the sleep and wake button works correctly as well, and that the volume and the mute switch all works. So you want to check those switches on the device. And the other one that I only thought at the last minute this year to check, but turned out to be very important to do so, was the camera. So what we did was I had the kids pick up every iPad, go into the device, and just open up the camera application and just make sure you could take a picture. And we actually did find that the only device we had that was dead on arrival was not actually fully dead on arrival, but it had a bad camera. And this device, you know, when this was iOS 6 at the time, when you open up the camera application, you had that iris opening animation. Well, because the camera hardware was broken in that iPad, the iris would never open. So we couldn't take a picture. So that was how we found that one. But bizarrely also, we found another one where the case that we had put on the device was missing the hole punched out for the camera. So the cameras, it looked like the camera was broken, but the camera was fine. But it was that the case actually had not been cut properly. So we had to get a replacement case as well. So we had one bad case and one bad device in 110 devices this year. So it's a pretty good rate. And that's certainly a better rate than we had with our iPad 1s. So in terms of the number of devices that came broken out the box this year, we did much better this time than we did before. I think we had 4 devices in the first deployment where we had to get them replaced within the first month for screen issues and things like that, but we've not had any situations like that this year.
Before we move on, let's thank our last sponsor of the night. It's a new sponsor. It is Footprints Recruiting. They are a teacher placement agency dedicated on finding qualified licensed teachers overseas. Considering the current job market for teachers, this is a very attractive option. The job for certified teachers go from teaching English, core subjects, to very specialized subjects like information technology. They're constantly hiring, and they have several jobs in several countries around the world. So, you know, it's not like there's one. They got multiples. They'd like to really talk about their IT teaching jobs in the UAE. And if you'll go to footprintsrecruiting.com/IAT, you'll see a special landing page with a list of those jobs. So we'll have a link to that in the show note in the show notes at outofschool.net. Again, that is footprintsrecruiting/IAT. These jobs would be with the Institute of Applied Technology, a government-run polytechnic school that has campuses all over the Emirates, including Dubai and Abu Dhabi. This institute has state-of-the-art facilities as the government is investing heavily in converting its petrodollars into a tangible knowledge-based economy. This investment, knowledge-based economy, has led to one of the largest educational reforms in the world. Since the institute is undergoing a reform, teachers will be able to shape the future of their programs. The salary, here's the good part, is $3,500 a month in U.S. dollars based on experience. Comes with paid vacation, relocation allowance, housing allowance, and health insurance for family, and more, all included. So again, to apply for one of these jobs, go to footprintsrecruiting.com/IAT and use your teaching skills all around the world. So that actually would be fun to go teach in another country.
I'm literally Googling average daily temperatures in Dubai right now. So you tell me $3,500 a month, IT teacher in Dubai.
No, and right. Paid vacation.
I'm done with the show. I'm done with the show, Bradley. I'm off.
And paid vacation, relocation allowance, housing allowance, health insurance. Sounds pretty good.
I'm literally dropping my microphone right now and looking at my passport.
Why did you send me a GIF of a microphone? Now, again, go to footprintsrecruiting.com/IAT. I think this would be awesome. Even if you did it for a year or two, that's what would be neat. Didn't want to do it long term, do it for a year or two. That'd be fun. So thanks to Footprints Recruiting for sponsoring the show this week.
I've got a friend who teaches in Saudi Arabia, and when he comes back for holidays, the only thing he's not allowed to tell me about is what car he drives and how much it costs to fill his tank, because he drives a car that's like 8 times larger than mine, and it costs him about 50 pence to fill the petrol tank. So that conversation is off topic now. We're not allowed to. I just can't cope with it anymore. Okay, Bradley, so you've got a little kind of checklist for, you know, once you're ready, you've got the devices there and set up. What comes next?
Well, and again, you could have done this at any point, but it's also good just to chuck it one last time. Make sure your apps are loaded into your, if you're going with managed distribution, if you have that available, make sure you've got that stuff taken care of. Don't be trying to buy apps and transfer them into your MDM vendor the day of. I mean, have that done. Test your Wi-Fi, test your SSIDs, make sure they're working fine, that you don't have any weird firewall rules that are keeping it from working. And if you're using VLANs, test them. You know, I'm not saying you need to go out and get a full test kit, but just get some iPads online, make sure that everything is as it should. Get into your Wi-Fi's management portal, look at it, make sure it's working as it should. Just give it a kind of a once-over. And then have your MDM enrollment set up in Configurator as well.
Yeah, that's new, even since I did my deployment last summer. What you can do now, we've talked about the device enrollment program that's available in the US, where as part of the setup assistant, Apple will redirect a device to your MDM to enroll it as part of the setup assistant for iOS. You can actually do this, for those of us who are not in the US, you can do this through Apple Configurator. So if you go into the Prepare tab in Configurator and go into the Setup sub-tab in there, you can actually give them your, if you're using a self-signed certificate, you can give them your root CA, and you can also put in your enrollment URL, and that can be applied to a device that is not set up. You can apply that before you hand it out to the students. So when the students get it, they'll see swipe to set up, and they'll go through the iOS setup assistant. And at one point, after they've picked their Wi-Fi network, crucially, because obviously you need that to be enrolling in your MDM server, after they get the chance to pick the Wi-Fi network, it comes up and says, this device can be automatically set up by Cedar School. Would you like to accept that configuration? And they just hit apply. And at that point, that device is enrolled in your device management server even before they get to get started with iPad and click that button and get onto the home screen. So that's a really useful thing to do as part of your, even if you're doing the personal model where the kids will use their own Apple ID, to put that enrollment information in through Configurator first, so that when they get through to that point, they can just hit the button and they'll be set up automatically by your MDM. So that's a really powerful new addition, and it's not the same as device enrollment. It's not quite as belt and braces as device enrollment, because it's not, the redirection is not through Apple's activation server the way it is in the US, but it's the next best thing for the rest of us, and it works pretty well. Other thing to think about, Bradley, is just your device management server is going to get hammered on this day. So it's really important to make sure that you've provisioned that at the right level. And we struggled with that a little bit on the first couple of days, because the first thing that every kid wanted to do was to install apps. And because in our Casper self-service, they were kind of like kids in a candy shop, and they had all these apps for free, and they were just, you know, piling in to download tons and tons of them. They sort of brought our MDM to its knees. And that's not Casper's fault. It was my fault, because I didn't put it on a big enough EC2 virtual machine. So I had it on the smallest possible one, and that was fine when I was testing it with one device. But when the actual real traffic came on, that was far too small. So I had to, at lunchtime on the first day, I had to stop it, move it up to a bigger tier, and then start it up again. And once I did that, there was plenty of CPU power available for the traffic that was coming through to it. So that's just something to be aware of as well. That's more important if you're putting it on a machine that you can't do that with. But if you're virtualizing it, then that's not a problem. So the other thing, this is a bit of secret knowledge. The App Store or the iCloud system, or whatever part you might want to call it, basically the Apple ID creation system that Apple runs, has all kinds of anti-fraud tripwires built into it. And many schools can fall foul of this if, for example, you bring in 500 students and you tell them all to make an Apple ID in the same hour of the day, all from behind the same IP address. That raises a red flag at the other end in Apple's system. So it is possible to get your IP address whitelisted with the Apple Store, or the App Store rather, if you know that you're going to be doing a lot of Apple ID creation or app purchasing traffic in a specific period of time. Now, there's no website you go to sign up for this, but if you get in touch with your Apple SE or find out who they are through your business development manager, then they will send you a form basically where you say, what's your public IP address? What are the domain names that you might use? What are the email addresses your Apple IDs are going to be made with? When do you need your window to open up? So what I did was I had my whitelisting window open 7 days before we started school. And then that gave us basically 3 weeks of the start of term to do all of this busy traffic. And then that settled down to a more normal number after that. So that's something to be aware of, particularly if you are doing a big deployment and you're doing it all at once. To get your IP address whitelisted by Apple is really, really, really important.
Well, and it takes not long to do. I mean, this is one of those, like, if it screws up, you're going to be pretty upset. So just take the time to do it.
It's going
to
put a showstopper on the whole thing. So, but do start that early. That's not something that people will get. It's a manual process. It's not just a web page to get told where it is. Somebody emails you an attachment, you fill it in, you email it back to them, they have to email it to somebody else. So it's worth, you know, even like 2 months before, say, like, we know that in August or September, we're going to want to do a 500 or 1,000 Apple IDs over the course of 2 days. Can you make sure we don't get whitelisted or don't get blacklisted for that? And then that process can start. And it's not painful, but it's a human intervention process. So you need to account for people's busyness at that point as well. And then get the kids in, get them started, right? And paperwork, you know, this is when the paperwork begins. I don't know how you handle it, Bradley, but because we send our iPads home, what we do is we want people to know the acceptable use policy and sign a contract to say that they have understood and will follow it. So what I tend to do is as my timetable rolls through at the start of the year, every class will come in, I'll give out their iPads, we'll go through and last year it was Apple ID set up, but this year it won't be so bad as that. And what we'll then do is I will actually teach a lesson about the acceptable use policy and make clear and do some work around what's expected of people in terms of e-safety. And then I will give them their iPad and I'll give them printed copies of both of those things and a form to sign. I don't give them their charger at that point. The only way you get a charger and cable is when you bring me back that form that's signed by you and a parent. So that's how I get such a good return rate on that form. I don't think there's a form in the entire education system that gets returned as quickly as that.
What is the charge of the iPads when you send them home? Is it like a 10%? So you're really messing with them at that point?
No, I'm not quite as well structured as that. It's whatever it was. Usually, actually, they're charged pretty full, but what does happen, I've started to notice some kids have got a tactic about this now, is that on the first day of school, they make sure one of their parents comes to pick them up at the end of the day. Even kids who would normally walk home. And it's, you know, they come back to me in the last period, and Mr. Spears, Mum's outside, can I just go and get her to sign it right now and bring it back to you? And I was like, yeah, of course you can, but get it signed, you know. So kids are smart with stuff like that. And then it's just get on with it, right? I don't think I've got anything else apart from that. That's kind of the, that's your D-Day over, isn't it?
Well, and, you know, you get day, you know, obviously you wake up and you've got day two and you've got day three, you've got day four. And if you have, you know, infrastructure issues, address them. Don't freak out. Don't stress out. Mm-hmm. Just logically think through it. If someone says, hey, I'm not roaming properly. You know, one of the things you could do there is turn off low data rates. If you haven't turned off low data rates on your Wi-Fi, turn off low data rates. And that'll kind of, you know, ultimately, like with roaming, the client makes the decision on when to roam. So you can turn off low data rates so maybe they can't hang on to something at 2 megs when there's one at 75 that they're right under. Just work through those things logically. You know, lean on your vendors. You know, your value-added resellers for your infrastructure gear. Have your Apple SE's number in your phone. I mean, just if you have issues, contact them. They've run into all this stuff before, and they'll help you work through it. I mean, you're their customers, and that's their job.
Yeah, and if you're doing a major deployment of some kind like that, let them know when your dates are. Like, what are your key dates? First day of school. You know, and the day before, probably, and a couple of days after. So just make sure that they're aware of when your critical times are going to be so that they know to possibly expect a call from you at some point as well. But yeah, once you've got through that period, your first week or whatever, you're now into the hard business, right? You know, in some ways, all of the stuff that we've talked about is the easy bit. The hard bit's actually doing it. And I think, you know, it's sort of welcome to the rest of your life at this point. Because now you've got to go ahead and actually teach. And that's where you can learn the stuff that we've talked about. And you can learn it in just sitting and listening to this podcast for 15 weeks at a time. But what comes after this is something that is so big, so professionally challenging, and has such huge ramifications for every part of education that I'm only 4 years into it, and I'm only now learning things that I don't know how I'm going to overcome some of them. I don't know how we're going to change our model of assessment to really be a fair test of the capabilities of the networked student in the 21st century. And it may well be, I'm starting to realize, and I don't think this is too pretentious a way to put it, but potentially, like, the rest of my teaching career will be about solving that problem. Really, I think that's, to my mind, that's what the next 20 years are about, is about figuring out a way to move the whole of society's idea of student assessment away from exams and onto a much more humane and appropriate way of assessing people's competence in a world where, you know, by default, both early education students and also people in the workplace routinely collaborate across the world, have access to the entire internet's knowledge, and work together with people. And and the job is to eliminate these 3 years in the middle of your life, or in the middle of the early part of your life, where those rules are suspended, so that we can make a fair assessment of you. And I think that's the challenge. That's going to be the big, big job. The challenge is not going to be deploying a new MDM, because that's easy, right? That what I'm saying there, that is the hard challenge. That assessment, the way that teachers work in the classroom, the expectations of parents, the expectations of universities, the expectations of governments, international organizations, how do we change all of that? I can't do that alone. And there's no way all these organizations are sitting around waiting to hear from me. But I think what I hope is that if we build a movement around the full use of not just computers, but computers and the internet in schools, then it will become just increasingly difficult to argue that a paper memory test is going to be enough to really show what students can do. And to me, once you get your deployment done, once you get your technical stuff out of the way, it's welcome to the rest of your life. And good luck with that. It's a heck of a journey to be on. And it's super exciting, but it's, you learn new things every day. And you realize there are new challenges. You solve one, and then there's another one, and a bigger one, and a bigger one, and a bigger one. And eventually you're going, well, you know, how did we change the PISA tests to really work with this? And suddenly you're trying to change the whole world in one go, which is impossible, of course. But you may as well dream big. What do you think?
I think, I think that's a kind of a great thought to end this series on. And that's really our goal, is to change education for the next 20 to 25 years, as taking the advancements we have in technology and rethinking what it means to be a teacher, rethinking what it means to assess students and what it means to succeed in school.
And indeed what it means to be educated. You know, because there was a time when we believed that being educated meant that you knew the dates of all the battles. Is that really what we do anymore? Not so much. I mean, I'm not saying that it's only computers and the internet that have changed that argument. It's not. But in a world where everybody's connected to knowledge all the time, what really are we looking for? And I think we've fallen back on things like creativity in the classroom, and we've fallen back now on coding as a thing that people have to do in school to be educated in the modern world. As the definition of that is that you can program computers. But I think that's that's far too simplistic an approach, just to be able to say you could program the computer, therefore you're now, you know, somebody who appreciates the whole complexity of the digital world. That's not at all true, I don't believe. And I think we're still working on a lot of this stuff. But I think also, and just to wrap it up with this, that we're never going to get to those solutions unless we put the computers out there and start experiencing what happens. Because sitting back and trying to think this through in the complete abstract is impossible, because some of the results are so counterintuitive that you'd just be wrong. So let's get out there and let's do it.
Yeah, that's been a fun series. I hope you guys have learned a lot. We've had a lot of fun. iOS 8 comes along and makes us rethink a lot of this. But if it does, hopefully for the better. I think we've probably seen we probably won't see massive changes to deployment practices because, you know, the technical aspect of that, because a lot of that has just recently changed. What you'll see probably the next year is an increased rollout of managed distribution worldwide. We hope anyways.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that's the big thing for many parts of this Apple system, is that it's now great in the US, it's pretty good in Europe and the other countries that have got VPP, Japan and so on. It still remains very, very, very difficult in countries like South Africa. And I can't remember where else doesn't have it, but obviously many countries in the world don't have it. But that's the example that's foremost in my mind. And it's really important, I think, that all of these Apple programs now get to all the countries where the App Store is. Because it's frustrating to have the basic stuff and not have the advanced stuff on top of that. So let's hope that that process can be accelerated over the next year as well.
I want to thank our sponsors again for the show. Fine folks at Aerohive, makers of cloud-managed controllerless Wi-Fi. Jamf, makers of the great Casper Suite, the mobile device management software for Apple products. And the new sponsor this week, Foots Recruiting, for wanting to look at teaching over in another country. We'll have links to all of our sponsors in the show notes. So if you enjoy the show, we'd appreciate a review on iTunes. Also visiting our sponsors if you're interested in any of their products, and definitely let them know you found out about them from our show. That makes them happy and helps us keep the lights on here at Out of School Headquarters.
Okay, so people can find my blog at spears.org, and I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter.
My blog is chambersdaily.com with a slightly new redesign. I've changed some font sizes if you're interested. Probably not, but that's okay. And I'm on Twitter at Bradley Chambers.
Okay, and Liz, thanks for listening, everybody. It's been a great series to do. I've really enjoyed doing it. And I certainly hope people have gotten something out of it. If you have, if it has affected your deployment, we'd love to hear some feedback on that. You tell us the story, and if we can share it on the show, please let us know that as well. Thanks for listening.